This episode of the Future of Work podcast is brought to you by ServiceNow. Today's workforce expects consumer-grade service experiences, but HR is too busy manually responding to repetitive employee inquiries, leading to lengthy resolution times and frustrated workers. With ServiceNow, you make service delivery more efficient for HR and provide fast, personalized employee service, even for cases that require action from other departments. This year, Forbes also named ServiceNow the world's number one most innovative company. I've also personally known Pat Waters, who's the chief talent officer at ServiceNow for several years, and I'm always impressed and inspired by the work she's doing in the HR space. According to their CEO, John Donahoe, not only is ServiceNow helping to make the world of work work better for people, but they're leading by example in using their own technology and platform to drive a truly digital and employee-centric experience within their organization. You can learn more by visiting servicenow.com/HR. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter to get access to the podcast episodes right when they are released, along with transcripts, free training videos I create, and a bunch of other fun stuff. You can do that at thefutureorganization.com/newsletter.
You know, there's a lot chatter and noise around AI, machine learning, automation, and it's really interesting because it's no different than any new technology that comes out, right? The hype is always so much better than and so much more interesting than the reality, right? So I'm really excited about the technology because I think there are so many applications that we can utilize technology to help our people be better or help our customers become more efficient. But the reality is, you know, when it comes down to machine learning and AI, is that we're still kind of far away from the day where a customer can talk to a machine and resolve 100% of the issues that they might be able to do so with a human.
That's Andy Lee, founder, chairman, and CEO of Alorica, a customer experience provider with around 100,000 employees in 130 locations around the world. Alorica provides staffing, facilities, and technology to companies in various industries ranging from healthcare to travel to retail and everything in between. Andy built one of the first cloud-based software-as-a-service customer contact management applications, which eventually gave him the basis of what became Alorica in 1999. Today, we are exploring what skill sets are needed for the future of work, why Andy feels that the AI hype is not based in reality, a look at the ethics and social responsibility behind outsourcing to technology, and how Alorica is investing in microlearning.
The workforce, which used to just do like what I would call turn and type or answering simple questions or like routine tasks, right? How do we teach a workforce that does routine tasks to be able to think more critically? And I think that's one of our biggest challenges going forward, because the routine tasks are pretty much all, you know, those are the jobs that will be most at risk. And we've got to teach more people more critical thinking.
This is Jacob Morgan, best-selling author, speaker, and futurist. Welcome to the Future of Work podcast, where every week I speak with C-level executives, business leaders, and authors to explore how the workplace is changing and what the future of work is going to look like. The goal of this show is to give you the insights, the ideas, and the inspiration to help future-proof your career and your organization. If you want to get access to more content, such as podcast transcriptions and information on working with me or having me keynote your next event, you can visit thefutureorganization.com. If you get a few seconds, please rate the podcast on iTunes or whatever your preferred channel is. It really helps the show, and I personally appreciate it since the podcast does take quite a bit of effort to produce. In case you are interested in sponsoring the podcast or working with me, my email is jacob@thefutureorganization.com. Lastly, I launched a new community called The Future If, which is a network of business leaders, authors, and futurists, some of whom are podcast guests, who explore what our future can look like if certain technologies, ideas, approaches, and trends actually happen. Each week, we explore a new topic, which ranges from autonomous vehicles, AI and automation, leadership and management, biohacking, and anything and everything in between. If you want help figuring out hype from reality and are interested in having deeper conversations about the future, then I encourage you to visit thefutureif.com. Thanks for coming along on this journey, and I hope you enjoy the Future of Work podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Future of Work podcast. My guest today is Andy Lee, CEO of Alorica. Andy, thank you for joining me.
It's great to be here, Jacob.
So I have lots of questions for you today, but before we jump into that, I'd love to learn more about you, as I'm sure with the listeners. So why don't we start with what do you do and what does your day look like as CEO of Alorica?
It's a great question, Jacob. I'd say every day is a little bit different. I run a company that has around 100,000 employees around the world. We have incredible clients and partners across the entire spectrum of all industries, from healthcare to retail to e-commerce to consumer electronics, communications, cable. And so I spend a lot of my days either speaking with clients about the challenges that they're facing and the things that they hope to accomplish in terms of becoming better engaged with their consumers and customers, and finding different ways to understand and hear their voice. I spend a lot of time internally with our people, understanding our people and understanding what's important to them, what we can do to help make our people more successful, more effective, more efficient, more satisfied with the work they're doing. And I spend a lot of time thinking and working with our technology teams to understand what's available, how we're approaching solving those problems that our customers and our employees are facing, and how we make our business better. And then I wish I had more time to do this, but I do spend a lot of time thinking about what the future of the world looks like and how we best fit into that future ecosystem.
And how do you start your day? So, what time are you up in the morning? Do you have a regular routine that you practice, or is every day just kind of all over the place?
So that's a great question. I wish. Okay, so I would tell you what I wish I do. I wish I woke up at like 5, and I wish I went to work out, and then I wish I started my day after having a cup of coffee. But I'm not a super early person, so I typically wake up at 7. And the first thing I do, unfortunately, which I know that every study tells you not to, is I look at my phone and check my emails and see if there's anything on fire. I drink a cup of coffee, and then hopefully I get to see my kids before they go to school. And then I usually get in the office around 8 and start meetings or calls then. And basically, the day is filled pretty much with meetings or either over the phone or in person, and going through reports or traveling. So there's a lot of travel that's required in the job as well.
And how did you get to become CEO? Because I heard that you actually started off with your own business as a kid. You had vending machines, then you did exporting confectionery and beverages to Taiwan. And now you're the CEO of a company with over 100,000 people. So how did you go from vending machines to confectionery to CEO of Alorica?
That's a great question. So I started – actually, I'm the founder of Alorica. I started the company in 1999. And what I really had started the company to do was to we had started as a software as a service provider. around the same time as Salesforce. And at that time, Salesforce was focused primarily on CRM from a sales perspective. And we were primarily focused on providing a software as a service for from a service application perspective. And we were primarily focused on helping computer and technology companies be able to manage their products and customers from an end-to-end perspective. So, you know, somebody buy a computer and we would be able to track that customer and their computer from the time they bought it all the way till the time that it was disposed of. So every and handle everything in between and create deep insights into the product and the reliability and the opportunities for improvement. As well as manage that customer through its life cycle, finding different ways to, you know, sell different components and peripherals and other things to them. So it was we were early in terms of the technology, and we were really big in terms of what we were trying to solve. And for the first 3-4 years, that's what really what we worked on. And we're very fortunate to work with some of the larger names in the computer industry at that time and be able to provide that end-to-end capability for them.
What does Lorica do?
What do we do today?
Yeah, so what is your main business for people that are maybe not familiar with Lorica or even in the category that you guys operate in? Maybe you can give people some background information around what you guys do and what even your industry is all about.
Yeah, that's a big question as well. So, you know, we are probably the best way to put it is we're a customer experience provider, right? So the largest companies in the world ask us to engage with their customers on their behalf, which means when a consumer buys a product or subscribes to a service like a wireless phone or cable, or does e-commerce shopping, or in any way, shape, or form engages with any company. Like, so could be your healthcare company, it could be your bank, your credit card, your insurance, your Uber, your Lyft, your airline, hotel. In each one of these instances, customers engage with these companies through multiple channels of communication, which include voice, email, chat, social media. And so on our clients' behalf, we provide the staffing, the facilities, the technology to engage with those consumers to solve their problem, to take an order, or to resolve whatever issue that they may have or inform them of something that they need to know. So I, you know, probably the best way to say it is that we are a provider of skilled labor to solve problems for our clients.
So what would be some examples of where people may have come across Lorica, probably without even realizing that they're actually working with Lorica?
So, if you were to call your wireless provider and ask about your bill or want to change your plan or upgrade your phone, you would probably most likely be speaking to one of our associates. If you were calling your cable company and wanted to add a different package or purchase a pay-per-view, you might be speaking with us. If you were to call your favorite e-commerce company, online company, and wanted to place an order, get more information about a product, or return something, you might be speaking with us. If you were to call an airline to book a ticket, or travel online travel agency to book a ticket and hotel, you might be speaking with us. If you're enrolling into a healthcare plan, or had questions about the medication that you should be taking based on your insurance coverage, you might be speaking with us. So there's a significant amount of – or if you had a TV or a computer and you had a technical issue, you might end up speaking with one of our agents as well.
Hmm. So you guys serve a lot of different companies and industries.
That's right.
And why? And this is also an industry I'm not super familiar with either. I mean, of course, I've heard of it. I'm aware of it. But why don't a lot of these companies, I mean, why go with an Alorica instead of, you know, why aren't they hiring these employees themselves and just doing everything in-house?
Well, I think, you know, as businesses have evolved, businesses continually ask themselves, what are we best at, right? And what is our core competency? What are the things that we need to do best? And everybody's starting to specialize in things, right? So companies look to Alorica because we specialize and we invest in attracting, developing, and performance managing people, right? So regardless of the task, regardless of the work, right, we're able to put more energy, more focus, more investment in the functions of attracting, developing, and performance managing people at very large scale. So if you think about a lot of companies, you know, if you the amount of attention that's required to manage 100,000 people, it's a lot of work, right? And it may distract you from designing the best product, or coming up with the best service, or focusing on technology, right? It may be a distraction because there's only so many things that you can focus on and be great at, right? So what we've chosen to do is to be great at the science and practice of attracting, developing, and performance managing people, right? So we invest a lot in the in not just doing, but also in the science of match. So understanding people's personalities and what skill sets they have that would best correlate with different types of work, right? We invest in the science of recruiting. How do we find those people in all the different labor markets that we reside in, right? And then we invest a lot in the science of training and learning. How do people best learn? How do we help people learn faster and retain more in a shorter period of time? And then we also focus a lot in the science of performance management. How do we understand where people are being successful and help them do that more consistently? And how do we find out where areas that people are struggling and help them to become competent quicker? So, you know, if you think about every company and the amount of time that they have every day, every company can't do everything all the time, or, you know, they can't be great at everything, right? So we as a company have chosen to really be focused on this aspect of the kind of business ecosystem. And I think that's why companies call us, because we're able to find large quantities of people that match their criteria, and we're able to attract them, train them, and manage them to deliver very specific outcomes for our clients, which typically include a customer satisfaction metric or a efficiency metric. Mm.
And the category, for those not familiar, BPO, business process outsourcing, right? Is that the?
Yes, I mean that's the industry term that we like to use, and it sounds very serious, but you know, it really is a business process, and outsourcing is just another word for partnering with a company so that everyone can do what they do best, right? And that's really how we really do look at it. We look at ourselves as an extension of our clients in understanding what their goals and needs are, and we focus on doing what we do best so that, you know, our clients can do what they do best.
I imagine this is probably a very tough industry to be in, because you have so many different customers all over the world. You have employees all over the world. Each one of them are working with different customers. They have to know different products, different information. You got to teach them in different ways, train them in different ways. I mean, how do you manage and balance all of this? Because I would imagine the training that you guys have to go through or that you implement inside of Alorica is probably much more complex than the training inside of, let's say, I'll call it a normal company.
Well, Jacob, I think you've articulated really clearly the things that I think about every day, right? Which is we have a highly complex environment because unlike our clients who have a specific product or a specific service, we have to be experts in so many different areas, right? And that doesn't mean that every individual in the company is an expert in every different industry or every different practice. It means that we have teams of people who specialize in specific verticals or specific functions. So we have teams of people who are focused in training, right? So in terms of the science of learning, right? So we have a platform that really focuses in on how people learn most effectively. But then we take that platform and we apply it to different industries. So whether it's a healthcare application or a technology application or a consumer finance application, we'll take that fundamental platform and customize it for that industry vertical or that that specific customer, right? So there's a lot of design work that needs to be done. And it requires that we have lots of people with lots of different skill sets. Our biggest challenge is to continually find people who have very specific skill sets that we can slot into different areas of the company to be able to serve our customers better. But it really is a people business, right? And it really is a business of applying technology to help our people be better, faster, smarter.
Well, I guess speaking of technology, you know, there's a lot of conversation around AI and automation and jobs and what the future of all that is going to look like. So maybe we can talk a little bit about just starting high level with your general thoughts on AI and automation. I mean, what are you seeing there? What are you paying attention to? And then maybe we can talk about the impact that this might be having on your industry.
Yeah, that's great. Great question, Jacob. You know, there's a lot of chatter and noise around AI, machine learning, automation. And it's really interesting because it's no different than any new technology comes out, right? The hype is always so much better than and so much more interesting than the reality, right? So I'm really excited about the technology because I think there are so many applications that we can utilize technology to help our people be better or help our customers become more efficient. But the reality is, you know, when it comes down to machine learning and AI, is that we're still kind of far away from the day where a customer can talk to a machine and resolve 100% of the issues that they might be able to do so with a human, right? Machines still don't have the ability to have full context that that a human has, right? I mean, if you think about a machine, you're really starting off with a completely zero slate, right? Humans, by the time you're 21, you have 21 years of context, right? Through engaging with friends, school, TV, movies, podcasts. But if you are a computer, you have no context. So the question is, you know, how do you get a machine to have enough context to be able to answer a question? That's a really interesting thing that you know, a lot of people are spending a lot of money trying to solve, and there's been an amazing amount of progress in what I would call the last 10 years, and even more so over the last 3-4 years. But and you know, it continues to accelerate, but it's still we're still in the early phases of really understanding how to do it well and how to apply it, right? But when it comes to our business and it comes to things that our clients are trying to solve and how we're applying it, we're really focused on automation, right? We're really focused on finding those tasks that are redundant the similar tasks that we can eliminate human touch from, right? So if one of our agents has to do something 100 times a day, How do we find a way to automate that task so that they don't have to type something 100 times a day, but can really focus on listening to the customer and really understanding what they're asking, and focus on being empathetic as well as serving the customer better? And so, you know, we're looking at and we're implementing automation in many different areas that just makes people's jobs a little bit easier and allows them to focus on the more high value aspects of what they do. We're continuing to use analytics to understand patterns and behaviors, whether it's for understanding what customers are looking for and how best to respond, or even, you know, what type of personality is best suited to handle what type of customer, or even what type of customer, right? So it's no different than the algorithms that we're working on and looking at, in some ways are similar to what the Match.coms are doing, right? Where they're trying to find personality profiles that have a higher percentage chance of being a match, right? And so we're working in applying those types of principles to our business as well. So it's a really exciting time to be in business today. I think, you know, there's so many new technologies that you can apply. We're applying chatbots to recruiting, right? So in the past, we would have lots of applicants have to call in and speak to recruiters. But, you know, the reality is the majority of those interactions are the same, which is, you know, there's somebody who's looking for a job. They want to understand what the job profile is and different characteristics of the job. And we can answer almost 100% of those questions through chatbots now, right? And it's a highly efficient interaction that I think our applicants from all the data that we've seen have been had extremely positive reactions to, right? And so now we're starting to take those experiences and apply them to our customers' businesses as well.
So you mentioned quite a lot there. So I have a couple follow-up questions. I guess starting with looking at the world of chatbots, because that's a very, I think, an interesting space. We keep hearing about chatbots on the customer experience side, chatbots for the employee experience side. And I hear very mixed things from companies and even from individuals, right? Sometimes you hear stories that chatbots are useless. They don't do a good job of answering any questions and people get frustrated and it's annoying. And sometimes you hear positive experiences like the one you mentioned, where you're able to answer questions that a prospective employee might have. Is a chatbot AI? Would you bucket it under the AI category?
Would I bucket a chatbot under the AI category? Well, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of people are putting everything into the AI bucket.
Yeah, that's the confusing thing. Like, it's hard. Like, what is AI even anymore? Like, how do you explain it?
You know, if you were to ask me, I would say chatbots are more like rules-based automation, okay, where you define it's more about if-then statements. You know, if a person asks a question and they answer A, then do this, right? To me, that's not really AI, okay? That's just like using logic and using some technology to create some decision trees, right? But a lot of people think that that's AI, right? To me, AI really starts with machine learning, right? And that's the most complex part about AI is how do you teach a machine a subject so that at some point in time, that machine maybe in the beginning is 30% accurate or has the ability to answer 30% of the questions, and then maybe next day 35. And, you know, obviously the goal is one day to be able to get to 100. Now, I don't know that that's going to ever be possible, except for maybe more simplistic or basic type of questions. But, you know, AI is the ability for a computer to start to have the ability to make contextual decisions, right? And it's not, it's not like a chatbot to me is one dimensional, right? It's really like pre-programmed to go through a decision tree, right? Whereas AI is like many layers of multi dimensions, right? And so I don't personally consider chatbots AI, right? But you know, this whenever something becomes really overhyped, everything gets kind of piled into that box. I don't know if that answers your question, Jacob, but
no, it does. I totally agree. I don't bucket a chatbot under AI, but I feel like nowadays, you're right, everything goes under the AI category, to the point where it's sort of like I ask people, how do you define AI? And it doesn't seem like there's a common acceptable definition of what AI is, which is weird because we keep talking about it, but
Jacob, I'll tell you the funniest story. I've brought in some of the biggest AI companies in to meet with me, and I said, show me like some examples of AI. And the example they showed me is something that I did in 1999. It was the first thing that I did, which was I built a email response engine where a customer would write an email, and we would categorize those. We would be able to extract the contents of those of that email, and then have multiple pre-populated answers on the screen for an agent to pick from.
And this, right? Was in the '90s. You did this.
Yes. Right. And so it's like, well, if the customer said, I have a question about product X and it's regarding Y, like this type of problem, da, 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 can you help me? Like, what should I do? Right. And so then on the right, it's when that email came in, the agent would see that customer email and they would see, you know, some possible answers on the right hand side of the screen that had answers that were associated to the words and context that was in the email. Right. So this is 1999. Right. So and they would read the email, then they would read the response and they'd click on the one that most was like it, and it would populate the email. They make a few changes and hit send. Right. And that would take where that email might have taken 10 minutes in the past. It took like 2 minutes, 1 minute. Right. So when I asked some of these really big companies who are really focused, spending a lot of money on AI, to show me an application, that's what they showed me. Right. And my kind of thought was, well, that's really funny. Like, I didn't know I was doing AI in 1999. Right. But
so what did you say when they showed you that? Were you like, you need to leave right now?
No, I was, you know, we're much more polite than that here. But we did say that, you know, that seems extremely simplistic, and it seems more like a rules-based decisioning system than real AI. But, you know, like I said, the technology companies are fantastic at marketing, right? And you've got to build the hype, but you've got to dig into the hype, right? And when you really dig into the hype, what you really find is a lot of what's being done to make things look really sexy and interesting is that behind the scenes, it's just a decisioning tree at the moment. Now, I'm not saying in the next 5-10 years, right, there aren't going to be incredible applications, right? But a lot of, like, if you really ask people to show you something, a lot of what I see today is that basic, right? But you know, that's technology doesn't move forward unless you sell a little bit of hype while you're working on the reality, right? So,
yeah. In fact, I don't know if you saw a recent article in the Wall Street Journal. They were talking about IBM Watson, and there was a lot of years ago, a lot of people were saying that IBM Watson would help cure cancer. It would be really great at diagnosing all these things. And a recent article came out 2-3 weeks ago that actually said that a lot of hospitals and doctors are actually getting rid of Watson. And Watson has not lived up to the hype, and it largely failed to do what everybody thought it was going to do, because the field of cancer research is changing so quickly that they're not able to update things all the time, that oftentimes IBM Watson, it diagnoses basically the same way that a human would. And there's been this kind of like the balloon, the air has been let out of the balloon when it comes to the applications of IBM Watson in healthcare. And part of me wonders, if you look at the history of AI, there's always like these boom times, and then there are periods that they call the AI winter, where like we realize that we've reached a hurdle, funding dried up, we can't make progress in something. And so part of me wonders if even in the coming years, if we're going to get to some sort of like an AI winter, where like the bubble is collectively bursting and we're kind of like, we're really not there where everybody says we are. So I don't know.
I would say this. It's one of the most people, I think, when they hear AI, they're like, whoa, I just need to plug in this magical black box called AI and all my answers will be – all my like problems will be solved. And then I think when they start going on the journey and they find out how much work is required and how many hurdles are really in front of you. You had kind of mentioned it, but it really starts to test your fortitude for wanting to do it. You think about, you were mentioning Watson. I mean, they said many, many years ago that Watson would beat a chess player. If you really think about how many years it took to do that, I think it was 20 plus, right?
Yep.
I think if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. So don't quote me on that, but my recollection is 20 plus years. Right. So the question for every company is, how committed are you, right? And to that path, because it is not a like plug it in and watch it solve problems process. It is something like you mentioned that requires continual focus, energy, investment, and you know what? There's probably for 99 failures, there's probably one success. Right.
Yeah, there's a famous Jay-Z song, right? I got 99 problems, but blank ain't one. I won't repeat it. But it's, yeah, I mean, you have 99 failures, exactly. And you maybe get one success.
That's right. And so, the thing that I do believe, though, is that what's great about our country, this world, is that people are willing to take those challenges. So I do believe we will see progress. But we're committed to continue to focus on the science of learning, right, and not give up. But I'm also extremely pragmatic and realistic in that, there's no silver bullets, and these things all take time. And, we'll collectively all get there, but it's not overnight.
For sure, for sure.
And now let's take 90 seconds to hear from our sponsor, ServiceNow, and their chief talent officer, Pat Waters.
Every company has an employee experience, those intentional and those organically created. For CHRO, you start by crafting your vision and you look at those moments that matter. They look at what is the business problem or opportunity they're trying to achieve, and they craft their talent strategies to not only achieve that goal, but actually to set themselves apart differentially in the marketplace to attract great talent. What I like to look at with my peers is, how do you automate the processes that are repetitive? How do you create insights into tools and technology that allow me to think ahead, not two steps, maybe five steps? How do we create tools that create less friction for me as an employee that makes me free up opportunity and time to do things that I love to do? That is changing the way people do work. CHROs are helping redefine how talent works today. The benefits of intentionally crafting an employee experience is high. It's retention, it's engagement, it's better productivity, it's unlocking discretionary effort. So if you free up some of my time, and I'm excited about my job and my work and collaborating, then I'm going to use that extra cycle to help others be successful. If you don't do that, you will lose that talent that you crafted for such a long time. The most successful CHROs today are looking around the corners, and I can't wait to see what they find.
If you want to learn more, please visit servicenow.com/HR. And now back to the podcast.
It's also really interesting that there's always a lot of talk you know, when you hear about outsourcing, a lot of people always talk about outsourcing to other countries and other parts of the world. But few people forget that there could also be this idea of outsourcing to technology. And so, you know, outsourcing to AI, to machines, to automation, et cetera. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. Like, how do you balance the human side with the technology side? It seems like there's a little bit of ethics involved, a little bit of, you know, social responsibility to make sure that we're still looking after people as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we think about this question quite a bit, right? And, you know, I think when I think about this challenge, in the long run, you know, it's not something like that's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years away, but it's a huge challenge for our entire society. And it really comes down to how do we train the workforce, you know, the entire workforce that are like the workforce that's in jobs that may have more risk. How do we work on training a larger population of the workforce to have different skill sets? Because the bottom line is the world is changing. And you go through history and you look at every different country and work, the work that every population in every country around the world has done, it's continued to evolve, right? Evolution and change is the only constant in the world. And so the best thing that we can do as a country, as a world, or even as a company, like just one small, you know, one company in the ecosystem, is to really think about what the skill sets of the future are going to be required and help our workforce get there. Right. And those are the things that, you know, we tend to think about quite a bit. As part of our really long-term strategy that we're really focused on, you know, what are the skill sets that are required and how do we teach our people how to do more of that, and be part of that, future.
Well, now that you mention it, what do you think some of those skill sets for the future are? So what are you guys focusing on? And maybe after we talk about what those skill sets are, then we can jump into maybe some of the stuff that you guys are doing to help make sure that you teach those skills to your people.
Those are great questions. So look, I think in one hand, I think there is a significant amount of work that will be applied to automation, right? Which means taking simple tasks and automating them. And that requires heavy process and technology driven skills that can study workflows and find ways to create efficiency through that, right? So these are skill sets like Six Sigma skill sets and engineering skill sets. And so we've got to create more people who understand how to do those types, that type of work. And that's a very logical kind of sequential type of work. And so, you know, I think having really strong logic and ability to apply logic to process and engineering is really critical. Now, our workforce today that is on the phones, right, that we're used to answer really simple questions like, what's your bill? Like a customer calls in and say, hey, what's my monthly bill? How much do I owe this month? Right. And all they have to do is look in the system and provide an answer. Well, those kind of tasks aren't going to be really required in the future. But what will be required is more complex questions. And what's really interesting is, you know, how do you define complex, right? What is the definition of complex? And I think the definition of complex, when I look at it in terms of the type of work we do, which is answering customer questions, is that you need people to have really strong listening skills and the ability to understand the context of what a customer is really asking for because the questions no longer are like a binary question of yes or no, like zero or one, right? The questions are like require the ability to apply a set of logic to a specific set of contexts, right? And that gets to the root of thinking, critical thinking, right? And so, you know, like I still remember like I'm Asian, and when I talk to my parents, you know, they grew up in Asia, and you know, they were taught in school through memorization, right? And they were taught to memorize everything, so you always had the answer, right? But I think, you know, when we looked at the education system here in the U.S., there was a big focus on critical thinking, right? Which is like, how do you take a set of complex variables or multiple variables and apply context and logic to come up with an answer that's not so obvious, right? And I think that's a skill set that we need to be able to teach a larger population of the workforce. You know, I think when you look at the top of the kind of pyramid of work, the highest paid jobs, of course, you know, lots of people in that segment have those critical thinking skills, right? The question is, how do we start to teach that critical thinking skills to a much broader group of the workforce, right? The workforce, which used to just do like what I would call turn and type or answering simple questions or like routine tasks, right? How do we teach a workforce that does routine tasks to be able to think more critically? And I think that's one of our biggest challenges going forward, because the routine tasks are pretty much all, you know, those are the jobs that will be most at risk. And so we've got to teach more people more critical thinking, you know.
And it's interesting that you mentioned memorization as well, because that's how most schools operate, right? I mean, even when I went to college, as I'm sure when you and your family and a lot of your friends went to college, I mean, you're basically taught to memorize stuff from a book and then to recite that stuff during a test. So it feels like this whole idea of memorization is just kind of like ingrained into every aspect of like how we're supposed to learn, which is totally wrong. And we're now realizing that that's like not a great way to kind of future-proof your career and your life just by memorizing stuff.
That's right. Because if you think about it, you just ask Siri, if anything that you need to memorize, you could probably ask Siri and Siri could tell you the answer, right? So, yep. And so that is definitely not the way of the future. But critical thinking is not an easy thing to teach, right?
It's true. Yeah. Well, you touched on some of these skills that are going to be important. So how do we begin to start to teach these things? And maybe you can talk about, I don't know if there are any specific programs that you have going on inside of Alorica, any stories or examples or details of how you are trying to instill and bring these skills into your company. I think people would love to hear that.
Yeah. So this gets to the science of learning, right? And one of the things that we have a fairly strong belief in is that people learn in very short bursts. So we have been investing a lot in micro learning. Right, we really believe in micro learning, which is teaching content in very, very small bursts, 5 to 10 minutes. Right, you know, I think people in general, attention spans have gotten shorter and shorter. Right, which is why you see kids today unable to watch a 2-hour movie, or even sit through a 1-hour TV show.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty crazy.
It's crazy, right? Because they're used to 5-minute snippets, 2-minute snippets on YouTube. And so rather than kind of fight that trend, right, we're using micro learning to ensure like maximum engagement, right, of agents' attention or of people's attention span, right? And what we've seen is that through micro learning, people retain 20% more information. And we eliminate retraining by 80%, right? So using these kind of short burst videos, we're able to teach concepts to people with higher retention and less rework or retraining, right? And you know, I think the other aspect that's really critical is doing role playing, right, in group sessions. Like the ability to experience and kind of talk through scenarios in a group setting, we find is also extremely helpful. right? So you take a complex situation, you listen to a customer call that has like no black and white answer. You, in a group setting, you dissect the call and how it was handled, and you discuss, okay, where did we do well? Where were there opportunities? And we talk about the different paths and the different outcomes, and everybody kind of learns together, right? And has shared experience. So that's, you know, there's no substitute for that, quite honestly, right? Because that's where you create a safe environment where people can ask questions and people learn through discussion, right? We believe it's short bursts and through discussion that people actually have the best ability to learn. And within our organization, we have Alorca Academy, as well as the Alorca Language Institute, right? Where in the Alorca Academy, we're teaching leadership skills, which is all around critical thinking and situational behavior, which means like teaching leaders how to assess situations and pick the right action, right? And that's a lot. We do a lot of role playing in Alorca Academy, and within Alorca Language Institute, we're teaching people around the world how to speak English, more correctly, as well as like understanding context and cultural issues, so that when they're speaking to customers and consumers, they understand the context of the question that's being asked. But that's all through role playing as well as micro learning videos. So we're really trying to apply those two concepts to a variety of different specific tasks.
What is it like to work at Alorca? I know that's probably a hard question to answer because you have some people that are in corporate, you have some people that are different parts of the world. But in general, if somebody were to say, hey, you know, what is it like to be a part of Alorca? How would you describe or explain what it is like to work there?
Well, you know, we've experienced a lot of growth extremely rapidly. Like, you know, we've over the last 3 years, we've probably grown 4x. You know, I think,
which is crazy, by the way. That's like insane growth.
Insane growth, right? I think the interesting thing is that if you're curious and interested, and you're willing to ask questions and dig for opportunity, there is significant opportunity to move all over the company, whether it's from one country to another or one department to another, to develop different types of skill sets. But it's extremely fast paced. So you've got to be able to adapt quickly, and know how to ask for help. Right. And know how, like one of the best things that I see in our company is there is a lot of pride in mentorship, right? Wherever you go in the company, doesn't matter what part of the world, doesn't matter what function, what you hear the most is like people who say, I'm so proud of so-and-so. They used to work for me. I mentored them. And now look what they're doing in the company. Or you'll hear statements like, I really love my manager, Joe, because Joe really focused on teaching me these skills and helping guide my career. And today, look how far, you know, what I'm doing today. I really love what I do, and I've progressed in these ways, right? So I think it's the best part is that we have a workforce that really finds pride and joy in helping others develop and be successful. But you know, it's like anything in life, right? It doesn't come. It doesn't just come. You have to like actively search for it, meaning you have to be open to it, and you've got to put yourself out there as someone who's willing to do it, right? And like we always say, the more you put in, the more you get out, right? It's same that philosophy applies to every part of life, and this is an organization where the more you put in, the absolute more you'll get out, because there are so many people here willing to invest in you if you're open to it.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of really interesting things, and you have the coaching and mentoring, you have the learning, education, and training programs that are going on. Yet at the same time, I know for your industry, it's very, very hard to scale culture. It's very, very hard to deal with turnover, right, which is notorious for your industry. Glass door ratings are very, very hard for your industry. So how do you deal with that? I mean, do you look at things like glass door ratings? Are those important? I mean, why do you think are they lower for your space? Why is turnover so hard for your space? Because you would think that if companies like Alloric are offering these opportunities, they'd be these amazing places to work and everybody would want to be there. But still, it's so hard. Why is it so hard?
Well, you know, let's start with some of the fundamentals, right? Some of the fundamentals are this. For many of our employees, this is their first job ever, right? So if you think about what that really means, that means that a first job means that you come into a place without context of what it means to be accountable or responsible, or to be an environment where there are standards and expectations, right? And that means that we as an organization have a really significant and critical responsibility, which is to teach a lot of these kind of first job employees what all those concepts really mean. Right. And while, you know, I think in the beginning, I thought those things, you know, I assumed incorrectly that, you know, like all people enter the workforce with a comprehension that, you know, you take a job and you should embrace it with accountability and understand that there's expectations. Right. But it's not that way, right? Quite honestly. So it's part of our responsibility to society. It's part of our responsibility to our people. And it's part of our industry's responsibility to help these, as many people as we can, really understand what it means to take a job, right? And while that may seem like a really basic concept, you know, we aren't hiring the same people as the tech industry, right? As a Google or an Amazon or an Apple, right? We're hiring a lot of folks who, you know, are first time job seekers, right? And maybe haven't had that level of accountability in their life, right? And so we have a lot of fundamentals and basics that we have to help our workforce understand, right? Now, that being the case, right, that's our responsibility. That's part of our responsibility. And so, you know, at the same time, we think about things like Glassdoor as a platform that employees use to share their thoughts and concerns. We think it's an opportunity for them to give it's an opportunity for them to have a voice. Now, we have lots of internal opportunities for our employees to give suggestions and as well as share thoughts and concerns. But, you know, that's just one more channel, right? Like, no different than our clients. We have many, many channels which we try to create for our employees to speak to us and let us know how they're thinking. So for things like Glassdoor, like every other channel, we're constantly monitoring it and we're constantly learning from it, right? So we read and study every post, and we try to understand if there's something that's fundamental or something that's situational, or is it something that we can fix in our platform and in our infrastructure or in our our leadership or our training to address. And because
you really take Glassdoor seriously. I mean, you read through all the posts and take time to kind of study that stuff.
100%, just like we do for every internal channel, right? Yeah. We have internal emails and post places where employees can post thoughts and concerns. We read everything, right? Because we're always focused on enhancing our employee experience. And we learn a lot from these, you know, like there's been so many things that have come out through these different channels that we've looked into and said, hey, wow, that's an opportunity, right? Thank you for raising that issue. That's a systematic issue that we need to go address. Could be a technology issue, could be a process issue, could be a training issue. But we take every single one of them very seriously.
You know, I realized I never thought to ask most executives this, but do you find that the internal data that you collect on your employees matches the external data? So, for example, if you were to look at your Glassdoor score, does your internal survey that you do reflect that? Or do you find that they're very, very different as far as what the employee survey says versus what Glassdoor says?
It's interesting. We do look at that. And what we find is that it is different. Our internal surveys are, you know, more balanced. Like we'll get lots of suggestions on improvements, but we hear a lot more of the positive, right? We hear more about the culture. We hear more about the mentoring. We hear more about the opportunity creation. We hear more about the success stories. We hear more about the company working to take care of each other, right? We hear a lot of the things that that are fundamental to our culture and fundamental to our beliefs. Those things are really shared quite widely internally. When we look externally on things like Glassdoor, what we see is primarily the issues that are more like critical, right? And so it's a little more unbalanced, we believe, in Glassdoor than it is internal. But for us, it doesn't really matter, because we take every channel to understand what we have opportunity to do better and what we're doing well, right? So it's just to us, it's just a channel.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Well, maybe to wrap up, before I have some fun questions that I wanted to ask you, maybe the last more serious question. Maybe we could look at how technology has progressed over the years. So earlier on, you mentioned that the future of AI and technology and automation in 5 to 10 years is probably going to be at a very different place than where it is now. Are you optimistic about the future? I mean, what is your outlook or your perspective on where technology is going in 5 to 10 years? The impact that technology will have on jobs. I mean, what's your thought on where we're going?
I think it's the technology has only taken us forward, right? If you look at the overall net effect of technology, right? Yes, sometimes there's certain aspects of it that are negative, like, you know, has technology created a generation of kids and adults who are kind of addicted to devices or addicted to social media, or like has it created some I guess societal issues, like more anxious kids because they're on
Facebook,
right? Have they created kids who are playing Fortnite all the time and lack balance in their life, right? And which creates other issues. Yes, those are all kind of byproducts of technology and advancement. But when you look at the overall impact of technology, it's always a net positive, because look, it could be technology, it could be a food type. When fast food isn't technology, but fast food had a significant impact on obesity, right? And it's convenient and consistent and quick, But the byproduct was like high cholesterol and weight gain, right? So the same can be said for technology. There's good and bad, but I think the net is good. So when you ask me, like, if you ask me, how do I think about technology in the long run, I would always say it's always going to be net positive. But as leaders and people who have the ability to kind of influence how it's used, I think we have to be extremely responsible and understand what some of those potential risks are. So when it comes to technology replacing jobs, we have to be very thoughtful about the pace in which that happens. We have to be very thoughtful about understanding who may be impacted and what are we doing to future-proof that population, and how do we do it in a way with that's extremely responsible, right? And I think, you know, the thoughtful leaders are asking those questions and trying to address those issues before they become big issues. Hmm. Right? And I think, you know, I'm hopeful. And I'm always optimistic that this country and the leaders within this country always get to the right place. It doesn't mean that there aren't bumps. It doesn't mean that there aren't bad actors, and that it doesn't mean that there aren't CEOs out there who put the interests of their initiatives or their goals ahead of society's. But I believe that there's also enough CEOs out there who understand that there's a responsibility to the greater good, which is understanding those impacts that that technology can have, and working really hard upfront to minimize them, right? And and that's, you know, at the end of the day, the world has always gotten better, right?
Yep.
That's why you have to really always have faith in humanity.
Well, I think that's a great way to wrap up. I just have a couple of fun rapid-fire questions for you, just so people can get to know you a little bit better. Starting off with, what do you consider to be your greatest failure?
Goodness, there's so many. You mean like a specific?
Yep. Is there a specific failure that you remember that was just like a disastrous or whatever the most spectacular failure might be?
That's a hard one because there's so many to choose from. Give me a second to think about that one. That's a tough one.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump to the, I'm starting off with the negative ones first, and then we're going to jump to the positive. So the next kind of more negative one is, what's the most embarrassing moment you've had at work?
You know, it's funny because I don't really remember too many. Maybe, I don't like a lot of attention. So I think probably some of the things that I get really embarrassed about is when I go visit, all of our sites around the world, and our people are so gracious, and I don't like standing in the middle of a room, and I always end up in the middle of the room with our amazing people singing or dancing or doing amazing things to show me their talents. But it's just, you know, those are uncomfortable situations for me. Just because I don't like being the center of attention. But
all right. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of the culture that we're building here at Alorca, right? One that's really focused on making lives better, and one where people really care about each other in the most fundamental way. And the fact that I get to see that on a daily basis and hear those personal stories and see those like incredible acts of generosity and kindness, that's what I'm most proud of.
Okay, that's a good one. What's the hardest business decision you've ever had to make?
I think the hardest business decisions are always centered around people, right? Whether it's hiring or letting go, right? Those are the ones that are most difficult to make for me personally.
Okay. What is your favorite business or non-business book?
Oh, these are tough questions. You know,
are like harder than the actual the series questions.
I know, because I read a lot of books, but I don't really have any favorites going on. I find every book to be interesting. Every book teaches me something different or new, then it's interesting to me. So I really don't have a favorite.
What's one that you like, or maybe that you're reading now?
Well, right now, because we're looking a lot in India. I'm reading a book about the industrial development of India, and so that's really interesting to me too, because I'm trying to better understand the culture, better understand the system and how it was created, and what's critical. Yeah, so those are things that as I look to different parts of the world, I always try to understand a little bit about how things got to where they are and why.
Who's one of the best mentors that you remember having? Or coach, or advisor?
I've had so many. You know, that's, I think, I'm pretty fortunate in that way. I've had a lot of mentors. One of them is a gentleman. His name was YC Lou. He was, he actually helped me run the company in the very early years. But he was a great mentor, mostly because he listened and was very non-judgmental, but gave advice in a very Yoda-ish kind of way.
But hopefully not with the Yoda voice.
No, not the Yoda voice, but he would teach through question.
Yeah, right? That's always nice. All right, and last question for you: if you were doing a different career, what do you think you would have ended up doing instead?
I probably would have either been a business analyst, software programmer, or maybe a quant.
Ah, very nice.
I like math.
And anything jog your memory for greatest failure? Or a failure?
Not beating my kids in basketball. And they're only 9 and 13.
All right. We'll accept that one. Well, thank you so much for your time, Andy. I know you're quite busy, and we went even over the hour, but where can people go to learn more about you and Alorica and the stuff that you guys are working on?
Just go to alorica.com. And you can kind of learn more about what we do and how we do it.
Very cool. Well, Andy, again, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Jacob. Talk soon.
Yep. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. My guest again has been Andy Lee, CEO of Alorica. I will see all of you next week.
Hi, everyone. It's Jacob. If you enjoyed this podcast and are interested in the future of work, make sure to sign up for my newsletter at thefutureorganization.com/newsletter. That will get you access to the episodes right when they go live, along with other resources such as videos and articles. And don't forget, if you're interested in employee experience, which by the way is a big part of the future of work, and if you want access to my free training series on this topic, then don't forget to check out employeeexperiencecourse.com. Again, that is employeeexperiencecourse.com. If you enjoy the podcast and find it valuable, please don't forget to rate it on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks, and I will see you next week.